everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
I am somewhat returned to life, so not bad.
That's good. We like life, I guess. Yeah, it seems like it's been a minute since the bunch of us were able to record together, so it's good to get the band back together. Sans Thomas, I guess, this week.
No, Sans, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't find my headphones when you were calling me because I can't use my computer this week, so I'm on my phone on Skype. And I was looking for my AirPods, and I could not find them. And I was, like, running around my... I was, like, using the Find My app in my own apartment to try to find these. Because I don't remember where I put them, but I have them. So here we are.
Well, then we're also joined this week by Thomas Henderson. Great. All right, so we'll do Promote Extend Trade. And today, apparently, is Elvis's birthday, which I didn't know because I am not an Elvis fan.
Can you get a hold of this guy, man? I've been wanting to. I've been watching Fallout New Vegas videos, and now all I can think of are the Kings.
Well, yes, the Kings. I'm a King fan, and I'm a Rex fan, but I'm not an Elvis Presley fan. But yes, Elvis was the King, as in the King of Rock and Roll, and he didn't like that nickname at first, but it stuck, because Elvis is synonymous with being, quote-unquote, the King. So what other Kings are we going to promote, extend, or trade? First, we have the Burger King, and I'm not really sure where his kingdom is. He is some sort of king, though, so they say. Next, we have King Kong. He's the king of Skull Island, and he's definitely someone not to be messed with. And finally, we have King Felix, and he is, I guess, the king of Seattle.
Burger King's an easy, obvious trade, right? Burger King's the worst fast food.
Yeah, fuck place. Burger King.
Yeah, I agree. But what gave me pause was at one point in like the late 90s, like maybe 99 or in 2000, they changed their fry recipe and they legit had the best fries, like better than McDonald's fries and Wendy's fries. But now their fries are shitty. So, I mean, that's no point with them. But also, they had a shit ton of Star Wars Revenge of the Sith tie-in stuff when the movie came out.
My parents never got me any meals with toys, so I have no connection to any of these fast food places based on promotional toys. Yeah, their food sucks.
It does.
Why would you...
Yeah, I never went to Burger King much.
There's one literally across the street from my building. And I choose to drive to McDonald's every time.
Yeah, same. There's a pretty shitty Burger King. There was a big fight, actually, in front of it, and now it's all on the news. That cop that beat the shit out of that little girl.
I'm not familiar with this particular incident of police
brutality. Yeah, I know. It's just like, oh, gee, another another police brutality incident. Yeah, that was literally, like, across the street from me. Jesus. Across the street from the shitty Burger King.
Who was the King Kong, man? I'm a giant kaiju movie fan generally, and I don't know that King Kong is a kaiju necessarily, but fits
He's
into
vaguely.
That. Yeah, fits into that general oeuvre. However you pronounce that word, I should know. I took French. King Felix was a lot of fun though.
This is true.
I'm extending King Felix because King Kong has done nothing for me, whereas King Felix has won me championships.
King Kong specifically has not done anything for
me. Anything for Steve?
Personally.
Well, we'll have to get him on the phone and ask him to answer for himself or why he specifically has never helped.
King Kong, not a friend of the podcast.
We made the same joke.
You're dead to us. Never come on the show.
Yeah, Godzilla kicked his ass anyway.
No, he didn't, unfortunately. That's also another reason why I don't like King Kong. Godzilla should have kicked King Kong's ass.
Well, he did in the new movie.
Oh, did he? Okay. I haven't seen that.
Spoiler alert. It was a very disappointing movie after the first two were genuinely pretty good.
Okay.
but it did resolve the issue from the black and white Godzilla versus Kong movie from what, like 1957?
Something like that. That's one I'm familiar with.
Where Kong somehow inexplicitly wins. Yes. Yeah. Well, granted, Godzilla was a bit of a pushover back then, but still.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now looking up the original date of Godzilla versus Kong, 1962.
Hmm.
Yeah, give me King Felix too. Like, this is a baseball podcast. King Felix is great.
King Kong, not a noted baseball player.
No. Just sucks that Felix fell off so quickly and so suddenly.
Yeah.
And his fall off was weird because it's like he didn't really get hurt, right? He just kind of sucked.
He lost like 2 to 3 miles per hour on the fastball, and when he lost that, the changeup wasn't as effective, and it's just like, well, that's the end of that.
I mean, the weird thing is he was effective for a while without the velocity as well. Like, early in his career, he would sit, I don't know, 95, 96, and he was really good. And then he was sitting high 92, 93 for a couple years and was still really good. And then it just all went to shit. And the next year, he lost even more velocity and it went even more to shit. And then his career was over.
It's pretty crazy when you look back on it.
There was a lot of talk about, like, whether it was just an innings thing, because he threw so many innings as a young guy.
Yeah.
So.
I remember reading something, like, in the late 2000s to mid-2010s, he, like, had the third most innings of any pitcher.
That could be it.
Well, R.I.P. King Felix. And I guess R.I.P. King Kong as well.
You're promoting Kong, I suppose, yes. Now, can I ask a different King Kong-related question? What position does King Kong play on the baseball diamond?
DH.
You don't think he can field?
Imagine him at, like, first base. Yeah. His strike zone is probably, like, awful for him, though.
The exit velos are impressive.
Well, you just
have to throw something. How big a bat is he allowed to use?
Whatever he
wants. He comes up with a tree.
Yeah. What position would he be? Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
So, like, I know he's slow, but you could put him in center field because he would take up so much
space. Right.
It would take like a step for him to cover the entire outfield. So you could just have him play outfield by himself and shift everyone close.
You could have him play catcher too. He'd probably be pretty good at blocking the ball, you know, because he's so large. The arm is a plus.
You got a huge target back there, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Please throw a strike.
The umpire will be too afraid to call it a ball.
Also, very good point.
Umpire won't be able to see.
The umpire can't see the strike zone, so.
Well, now we know who Steve Cohen needs to go out and sign next.
Yeah, if Francisco Alvarez doesn't work out behind the dish, we got to get King Kong on the phone.
King Kong surely will.
All right, well, before we go on to the meat of the matter for this week, there's a couple of things, a couple of updates on some of the international players that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago that are worth bringing up. The biggest update is that Jung Ho Lee, who is the current reigning KBO MVP, he's going to get posted at the end of this upcoming season. So he was due to earn his international free agent option at the end of 2024 anyway, but now he's going to be posted by the Kiwoom Heroes this upcoming winter, so he'll be in the MLB a year early. He's a pretty good player, as we discussed. He's a career 342, 407, 495 hitter over the course of his six-year career. He's going to be 24 this upcoming season. He's coming off of an MVP season, as mentioned, where he hit 349, 421, 575 with 23 home runs, 5 stolen bases, and 66 walks to 32 strikeouts in 142 games. He's primarily a center fielder. And the Mets will have most likely an opening in the outfield next winter, assuming that they don't activate Marcana's option. So the Mets could conceivably be in on the posting process, which is kind of refreshing.
Mm-hmm. And even if you do get keep Canna around, you could still sign him anyway.
Right, exactly. I mean,
I don't think he should forbid you from signing another outfielder regardless next year.
Mm-hmm. He also fits nicely in the Brandon Nimmo career trajectory, you'd think, because presumably maybe not next year, but within the next, I would say, 2 to 4 years, you're going to be looking at shifting Nimmo to a corner. Not necessarily because his defense has declined, but to keep him healthy. And this would presumably be an interesting option to slide into that spot. Mm-hmm. I've not watched, it's pretty hard to, I've not found any good videos of his defense from the KBO, but the reports I've read are that it's generally pretty good in center. Who knows how well that translates exactly, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's, stadiums are usually, well, not usually, stadiums there are a bit smaller in dimension, right. But, I mean, it's not like there's any U.S. stadiums that are like the Polo Grounds or anything like that anymore. I mean, everything is still fairly cookie cutter and normal, you know, nowadays.
And also, like, even if he has to move to a corner, luckily you locked down Nimmo for so long.
Right. Yeah. It's totally fine. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine having a, let's presume for a moment that the Correa signing actually goes through, knock on wood, et cetera, which is a much longer discussion, obviously. But an outfield group that would consist of Marte, Canna, Nimmo, Beatty, and Lee, that'd be pretty nice.
And that also helps hedge for Marte if he does leave.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
after next year, like, you're not completely devoid of outfielders at that point.
We could have, we could have Jung Ho Lee in one corner and Khalil Lee in another corner.
probably don't want Khalil Lee starting, but yes, that is a possibility.
Yeah, and hopefully also, you know, Jung Ho Lee works out. I mean, I think that his swing is a lot better than some of the other guys that have come from Korea and not succeeded, so that's, you know, points.
I like it a lot more than Ha-Sung Kim's.
Yeah. It's much more well-balanced and much less... The biggest thing is he doesn't have that big flamingo kick that most Asian hitters have, and in the U.S. that seems like it's just such a bad idea with so much more premium velocity.
Yeah, the timing is so, your timing window is already difficult, and then you have to factor in the velocity on top of it. It must be impossible.
Mm-hmm. So he would be 25 when he comes to the MLB, which is, you know, that's basically like prospecty age. You know, there's a couple of guys that are in AAA with other teams that are, you know, 25, 24 that have experience in AAA. You know, Michael Bush from the Dodgers, Josh Jung with the Rangers, Oscar Colas with the White Sox. They're kind of older dudes that are prospects. They've dominated the upper levels of the minors. Lee would be in that same boat, having dominated, you know, foreign league, which is the equivalent of an upper minor league. So he would definitely be a Mets top prospect again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there's a chance Williams or Parada blow the doors off and make that a conversation. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't mean that he would be the Mets' number one prospect, but he would be okay. Yeah.
He'd be in the top three, I think.
I don't see any way he's not a top three guy.
Certainly. If we're assuming at that point Beatty and Alvarez graduate, that's what I would assume. Either if they sign Correa, they could trade Beatty. I don't think they will. I think they'll have him play the outfield and then graduate him. But
well, the next update concerns another reigning MVP, but this one, I guess, might not be a Mets top prospect in the future. Munetaka Murakami. Now, we already know that he's going to be posted after the 2025 season. His contract extension with the Occult Swallows literally stipulates that he has to be. So there's no, you know, guessing or anything like that. No speculation. He's going to be. But unfortunately, at least at this point right now, he's probably not going to be entertaining the Mets. On a Japanese talk show this past week, he mentioned that ideally he would be playing for a team on the West Coast or specifically the Yankees. So okay. Hopefully maybe in 3 years, the Mets will have more positive branding, you know, with Cohen just going crazy and signing people and just doing crazy things. Maybe he'll be interested in the Mets as well as the Yankees and those West Coast teams. But for now, we are, I guess, on the outside looking in.
Hey, if 2/5 of the Mets rotation at that point is Shohei Ohtani and Kodai Senga, and exactly. They're saying only good things about the Mets, maybe that changes some opinions.
Here's hoping.
And a lot of stuff changes by the time he's ready to get posted.
Also, you just put the biggest pile of money in front of him, and it's probably going to change his mind real quick, because that's usually how these things go.
And I was reading a thread on Twitter where he mentioned that, and then people are discussing whatever. The whole concept is kind of annoying, actually. Players, specifically Asian players from Korea or Japan, saying that they would prefer West Coast teams, and the preponderance of them, signing and playing in the West Coast teams. There really isn't that. It's like a 3-hour difference, which is so minimal.
I feel like a lot of that is history based on who has signed a lot of players like that. The Yankees have a long history of signing Japanese players at this point and it working out for them. And so do a lot of the West Coast teams, like the Dodgers and the Mariners come to mind, and because of Ichiro and stuff like that. So I'm sure a lot of it also, when you're growing up in Japan, you see the guys who are the stars go to the Yankees and the West Coast, and you're like, well, that's where I want to go. You know what I mean?
That's true. I mean, Munetaka Murakami growing up, he saw Hideki Matsui not as a giant.
As a Yankee. You know,
as a Yankee. Geez, man.
And the Yankees are also the Yankees. No matter what, they're going to be.
Yeah.
They're going to be the biggest name in baseball. That's just the fact of the matter. The Mets could win 4 World Series in a row, and it'll always be the Yankees first because of history.
Well, then they need to win, 27 World Series in a row now?
In a row, yeah.
All right.
Easy.
I think they could pull that off.
I think there might be some calls to rebalance the sport a bit if that were to happen.
Little nothing but 2 decades of dominance. I could get behind that, though.
I mean, the Bundesliga has been won by the same team for literally a decade now, so I don't know. Maybe it's all things are possible.
All right, so back to the Mets minor league system now. We began our 2023 top prospect list this past week, so today we're just going to go over those players, maybe offer a little more insight, info, whatever. First up, coming in at 25 is third baseman William Lugo. He was signed by the Mets back in 2018, about a month after the international free agent signing period started, because they were basically tapped out almost immediately. They spent $2.7 million on Francisco Alvarez. They spent another almost $1.5 million on Freddy Valdez, who is now at the Red Sox. And they were basically done and capped. But they got some extra money from Oakland in the Jairus Familia trade. So about half of that went to Lugo. And his career has basically been unremarkable up until this season. He wasn't really great in 2019 when he played his first professional season in the DSL, missed 2020 because of COVID. And then in 2021, he played for the SCL Mets and wasn't really that great. This past season, though, 2022, he hit a combined 263, 347, 432. In 112 games combined with St. Lucie and Brooklyn, basically split 2/3 of the season with St. Lucie and then the last 1/3 with Brooklyn. He hit 14 total home runs, which puts him in very good company. Only Francisco Alvarez, Alex Ramirez, and Junior Tillian. They were the only teens or 20-year-olds in the system this year that got double-digit home run totals. So that's definitely something we like to see. And he also had a pretty reasonable walk-to-strikeout ratio. He had 50 walks to 117 strikeouts. So, you know, that comes out to a 10.6 walk percentage and 28.3 strikeout percentage. Reasonable. Mostly played third base last season. He had about 700 innings at third, 215 at short, 65 at first, and then a couple of games he was the DH. He's a big, thick kid. He's 6'3", 230 pounds, but he's pretty athletic and agile for now. So third base is definitely his best fit, you know, in the near-term future. Probably will have to move over to first base someday, but for now, third base works. You know, he's reactive and rangy enough, and he has a good arm, so well, that works defensively, and the bat definitely fits for third base. I think he's the kind of guy that does. I mean, he just arrived, I guess, is the best way of saying it. Can you be overlooked if you've literally just arrived?
I don't know. I mean, feels like
I guess
a guy
we knew about him for a while, though.
Yeah. Look, there's something here, but as you said, he's a thick boy. He's probably a four corners platoon type down the line.
Yeah, still a solid outcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would take that for sure. It's like the power in the on base percentage was a nice. If you're going to arrive in that way, that's two nice skills to have at your base.
Mm-hmm. What was encouraging as well is that their performance didn't dip at all after the promotion. Like you see a lot of these guys play well at A-ball mm-hmm. and then flame out the second they get challenged to a higher level. And he was basically the same. So I don't know. It's I'm not going to be sad if they wind up trading him for something, but he's a nice piece to follow and has a good chance to check in like the 10 to 20 range next year if these trends continue.
Yep.
I mean, he hit 4 home runs in 30 games with Brooklyn. So, you know, you extend that over the course of an entire season. That's like almost 25 home runs in Brooklyn. That's pretty good, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, you take that.
Oh, yes. Honestly, I would take 4 home runs in Brooklyn, too. I mean, you know how it is.
I mean, yeah, Brooklyn's like Jesus. For those of you who have never gone, it's cold and it's right by the water and it's huge.
I will not be attending. I'm going to force myself to attend some Brooklyn games this year. I'm not going to any until it's warm out. I'm not doing that to myself.
It's a very odd place because of where it is. It's right on the boardwalk, right by Coney, right by the beach. So hitting a home run there, it's like, I don't care who you are. It's like, goddamn, that's a big boy home run. All of them.
Right. I mean,
every single one of those home runs are earned.
Left-handers, you're just doomed. Like, you're not pulling anything into the wind coming from the Atlantic.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
All right. Next up, next guy who came in at 25 is Simon Juan. And he was the Mets' main acquisition in January when the international free agent signing period started. They signed him for $1.9 million, which was a little bit under the halfway mark of the $5.1 million that they had in their bonus pool. Played his first professional season this past year. He got into 53 games for the DSL Mets, and he hit .219, .310, .323 with 2 home runs, 16 steals, and 20 walks to 54 strikeouts. I feel like there really is not too much to say about Juan because he's just so young and just so raw. And there's just, you know, so many different ways that his career could go. He's speedy and rangy, though, so that's a good floor. You know, those are good tools to raise the floor. But in terms of, like, hitting, who knows if he'll be able to hit a lick or not, you know, too early to tell.
Yeah. Because, like, obviously that stat line isn't great, but also it was how many games?
53.
I mean, that's not a huge sample. It's not a tiny sample. It's not 2 weeks, but it's not the biggest sample in the world either.
Yeah. I mean, and a year ago, he was just chilling at home, you know?
Like, yeah, exactly.
He was doing whatever a Dominican 16-year-old does, so.
And then now he's playing professional baseball. Like, it's a big jump. So I kind of just ignored the stat lines for those leagues and call it a day.
I mean, we literally have no new information here, right? He's not he's not been so good that he's getting hyped out the wazoo. Like, some guys have, and he wasn't so disastrous that you're like, sometimes these guys just like strike out 50% of the time in the DSL, and you're like, that's a problem. But he wasn't doing that either. So I don't know. It could be a boast.
You want your entire system to be guys like this. All right. Next coming in at 23 is Eric Orzi. And he was the last guy selected in the super abbreviated 5-round draft in 2020. And ironically, he's the last man standing because JT Ginn was traded to Oakland. Isaiah Green was traded to Cleveland. And Anthony Walters and Matthew Dwyer were both released. So, you know, we all know that he had a ton of adversity in college in order to make it and get drafted in the first place. And this season now he faced his real first time adversity on the field as a professional. Last year, his first season with the Mets, it was a pretty solid year for him. He had a 3.08 ERA in 34 games with Brooklyn, Binghamton, and Syracuse combined. But this year he hit a wall in Syracuse. He appeared in 32 games for them, and he posted a 5.13 ERA in 47.1 innings with 42 hits allowed, 14 walks, and 64 strikeouts. And it was just a weird season for him because for whatever reason, he gave up a ton of home runs for a reliever, 11, which comes out to basically 2 per 9 innings, which is not what you want to see from, you know, like a one inning mostly reliever.
He was bad.
Yeah, I guess there's no sugarcoating it. He was bad. He did miss some time with an injury. And, you know, it would be easy to say, like, okay, yeah, like he was hurt. That's why he kind of sucked. But I don't think that tells the whole story because usually when you're hurt, there's, like, other signs and nothing else is really out of whack. His velocity was basically normal. His walk rates and his strikeout rates were good. They lined up with what he did in the upper minors in 2021. So I don't know why all of a sudden he was just giving out home runs left and right. But here's hoping it was a blip.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough thing to – reliever home run rates are a very tough thing to understand. If we had, like, full StatCast data on him, we could probably see a lot more. But, like, my best guess is that he struggles to – I can never remember which is command is which and which is control, right? But my best guess is that he's throwing strikes but leaving his stuff in too hittable a spot a lot of the time, and it's just getting hammered when batters do actually connect with it. So you might expect a really high hard hit rate or something like that, and that's leading to the home runs. But it's a reliever sample size. He was better in the second half. It could all be meaningless. So who can say?
Yeah, it's hard for multiple reasons because, like you said, with sample size, it could just have been a bad few months for him. And I wonder if – because we kind of – this time last year, we're talking about him as a potential early season call-up, and then he was so bad right out of the gate. I wonder if it's one of those things where he knows that he's like, oh, man, this is my shot, and I'm giving up home runs every day. So that does not make it easier for you when you're playing.
Yeah, that's
good. I know you can't really quantify the mental aspect of it because it's impossible to do so, but that stuff is real. Like, the guy sees the pressure of, oh, shit, like, this was going to be my shot, and now other guys are getting called up because I keep giving up home runs. That does not help, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
Stuff just snowballs on relievers, man. Like, look at Edwin Diaz. That dude was terrible when he first got traded here, and it just kept getting worse because of the nature of the position, and then he figured it out, and he was amazing last year.
All right, so you heard it here, folks. Eric Orzi is the next Edwin Diaz.
Oh, no.
That's what I heard.
It's going to be funny if he's really good this year and I get to be like, look at my predictions.
Well, here's hoping.
Right.
All right, our next guy on the list at 22 is Willy Fañez, and he's another guy that the Mets signed this past season as an international rookie. He was basically the other guy that the Mets signed. They signed him for $1.5 million, which is basically their other big expenditure. And then when you combine that with the money that Simon Juan got, that was basically like 80% of it. He almost wasn't a Met, though. The Angels signed him a couple of years ago to an unofficial, you know, handshake agreement. But after the 2020 season, when Billy Epler got fired, the Angels reneged on that contract and they left poor Willy Fañez hanging. But Billy Epner to the rescue, I guess. He got brought to the Mets, and Willy Fañez was still out there, so they signed, the Mets signed him this time officially in January. He made his professional debut with the DSL Mets this past year. He hit .257, .330, .297 in 32 games. He did not hit any home runs. He stole 10 bases, and he drew 11 walks to 24 strikeouts. Basically, like Simon Juan, he's basically a kind of speedy guy, so that gives him a high floor. Fañez is also a switch hitter, so that's useful. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, same stuff. There's no information, no new information about him that's, you know, giving him a massive amount of helium or anything like that. And he's just super raw and super inexperienced, so who knows how, you know, like, he'll develop.
Yeah.
I have no strong feelings one way or the other. All I know is my gut says maybe.
It's hard to have strong feelings with these dudes because they're just so far away and we have so little.
What turns a man neutral, Lucas?
Gold, lust for power. And again, like Juan, he's not getting... I don't know how to explain this, right? But like... When the guys that like have some buzz, there's like a specific crowd of people, you know where to see that buzz coming from, I guess. We haven't heard that for Juan or Fañez. We've heard it a little bit on another guy we'll talk about probably in a couple weeks, but yeah, just nothing. No new information.
So basically with prospects, you got to go to your prospect dealers. You got to hit them up and see if they have any buzz.
That's certainly one analogy to use, Steve.
Honestly, I think the I don't know how to best say this. The most important thing about Fañez, the most interesting thing, whatever, is that, you know, he got jilted by the Angels. He lost some money. Basically, he had an agreement for $1.8 million with them. The Mets signed him for $1.5, so he lost $300,000, which sucks. Because, you know, somebody in the Angels organization after Minossian took over just decided, hey, we're not going to honor these agreements that Epler made. But
are you telling me that the international system fucks over these 16-year-old kids routinely?
Right.
I'm shocked to find gambling in this establishment.
Fañez, along with another guy that the Angels dumped, Keterson Pavin, who got signed by the Rangers, they're suing the Angels for a lot of money. $17 million.
I didn't know this. Hell yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like you were kind of alluding, it's common practice to like unofficially sign players under the age of 16 in the Caribbean and basically promise them like, yeah, the organization is going to sign you. And it's a problematic practice because literally, like we see here, players don't have any kind of protection. And if the team wants to just be like, yeah, we said we were going to sign you and we didn't, you know, let you work out in front of their other scouts and teams, and we kept you in our camps and we had you follow the regimens that we wanted you to follow, but we don't want to sign you anymore. And, you know, like the player is left screwed. And I mean, I guess in terms of Fañez and Pavin, it's a happy outcome, even though they lost money, because they still got signed at the end and they still made considerable amounts of money. You know, who knows how many players are out there that they get
never heard of.
Yeah. Right. And that's like the end. So it'll be interesting to see like where this lawsuit goes and if the ruling is made in favor of the players, how that impacts, you know, like the whole international signing scene going forward. Because it is a madhouse? That's not really the right way. It's just, it's lawless.
It's lawless. There's technically rules, but no one follows them. And even your favorite team, no matter who it is, they don't follow them.
That includes
because otherwise they wouldn't sign these two. Yes. Like, it's the same thing when people are like, oh, the Mets are expected to sign this person, this international free agent. Like, how do you know that? It's because they already agree. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's not very hard to, once you think about it a little bit, it's not very hard to see the signs that it's kind of, it's dirty. Just the system is broken and they need to fix it.
And look at, what's his name? From the Twins. Well, he's not on the Twins anymore. He came, Miguel Sano.
Mm-hmm.
When he was like this mega like hyped kid, and then they started there being whispers like, oh, he's not who he says he is, oh, he's older than he actually is, and there was like a whole big thing like to basically just get him to sign for less money, and that's basically what happened. I think it was the Pirates that he originally was supposed to sign with. Yeah.
Yes.
And their like head scout in the area like basically had this whole whisper campaign about him trying to get him to lower how much he would accept, and he ended up just ditching the Pirates and signing with the Twins because they were the ones offering the next best deal, but that was still like half of what he was expected to get and wanted to get before the whole thing started.
As a shortstop, mind you, Miguel Sano was a shortstop prospect.
Yeah,
that's my favorite stuff. Juan Lagares, shortstop prospect.
It was all in a, I doubt it's on Netflix anymore, but I remember like a long, long, long time ago at this point, like probably 10 years ago, I guess. I don't know. It was a documentary about the whole situation on Netflix. It was called like Pelotero, which means like baseball player in Spanish. And it was like just documenting the whole situation. And it's shitty. I mean, these are multi-billion-dollar teams and they're nickeling and diming literally kids that have nothing.
Yep.
Stand up bunch of guys. Ah, stand up. That's pretty funny. Because the last guy that we're going to talk about is really tall. completely unintentional. So, yeah. The last guy that we're going to talk about this week, number 21, is Junior Santos. And he definitely feels like he's been around forever. But he just turned 21 a couple of months ago, so he could finally legally drink.
Steve, if you want to go exert my comments about Junior Santos from the last year year before, you can do that. I'll just be quiet.
Basically, there's two ways of looking at Santos here. On one hand, the Mets have been always very aggressive with him. And he's been extremely young at every level that he's pitched at. But he's never embarrassed himself. You know, he's generally posted either slightly above average or slightly below average numbers. And he has traits that you like to see in pitchers. You know, he's tall. He gets good extension. His fastball velocity is like mid-90s. It sits. And he gets good ground ball rates. So these are good things that we like to see. But on the other hand, as Lucas is alluding to, you know, you could see the potential, but at no point does it look like he's ever taken a step forward in the last couple of years. He still gives up too many hits that you'd want a guy to give up. His walk rate could be improved. His secondary pitches are still a lot more raw than you'd want to see from a guy who has now basically two full season years of experience and a half season in the Appalachian League. So this past season was, I think, his best season. And it's not really that much to write home about. He threw 116 and two-thirds innings to the tune of a 4.47 ERA, allowing 126 hits, walking 44, and striking out 105. And that was a little bit better than league average. But at the same time, you know, it happened in Brooklyn, so we know that Brooklyn is a very pitching-friendly environment, more so than the rest of the quote-unquote South Atlantic League.
I mean, there's a chance that the Mets are just not optimizing him correctly. I've talked to two different people who like the fastball or saw things they liked about the fastball. And I don't know what I'm doing when I look at pitches, but I don't see it. And the performance sure as hell doesn't show it. So I don't know.
It feels like
that classic, hey, he's tall and he looks like a pitcher, so he's going to be a good pitcher, right, guys? Right? Eventually?
Like, that's the problem, is that we're literally in the same exact spot that we were 2019 when he first came stateside, and you're just like, ooh, this guy is, like, cool.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's just frustrating, and, like, because, like you're saying, there are aspects to like his physical presence, certain characteristics about his fastball, his ground ball rates. These are all good things.
And that's why we're here right now, because he's never been bad enough to, like, completely ignore, but he's never been good enough to really get out of this general area. The only reason why he's down a little bit in the system is because there's just more players now. Like, the Mets system is getting a little better. So he would, what was he, probably like 16 to 18 last time or something?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
And now he's in the 20s. Like, it's not necessarily anything to do with him. It's more that the system is slowly and surely getting a little bit better, and they're getting guys who are, you should be plugging in there, because he should have been around 20, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is literally the definition of stock holding. Like, nothing has changed in the last couple of years.
Yep.
It's just frustrating. But I really don't know what they, I mean, if I did, I guess I'd be working for a team, but I don't know what they do to, like, improve him. Like, you know, his, off the top of my head, I don't really recall if it's a slider or a curve. I think it's a slider. It just has, like, not a lot of horizontal movement to it. So, I mean, it's slider is like, yeah. Changeup is like, yeah. It's like, well, he's been throwing both of these pitches for years. Like, what do you do to make either one of these better? I don't know. What do you know? You give him another pitch. Like, what is there left to give him? Like, I don't know.
You simply teach him a knuckleball and make him seven knuckleballer.
That sounds like a plan. I don't think there are any knuckleballers in the league anymore.
No,
huh?
There was no registered knuckleballs thrown this year.
That sucks.
Get Ohtani, show Ohtani some, like, old school Phil Niekro videos, and or like R.A. Dickey's Cy Young season. He'll be like, oh, that's cool. And he'll have one in his next start.
I bet you could get Scherzer to throw one.
Like, how would that work, like, though? Like, he's so max effort with his pitches, and
he throws the most max effort knuckleball ever. It's like 80 miles per hour, and it's terrible.
It's like 91.
And it's just like, it doesn't do anything. It's
just like, he's really like, it's a knuckleball change up.
Yeah, he's like, look at my knuckleball, guys. So we're like, Max, please.
All right, so yeah, those are Mets prospects 25 to 21. I hope that anyone listening, you know, we've kind of given more explanation as to why they're ranked where they are, and, you know, this discourse has helped and whatnot.
And I feel like we say this every year, but it gets a little more stuff to talk about the closer we get to the bottom, because there's just more guys.
Yeah, the Mets system has been very top heavy for years. I feel like maybe finally now this year it's like getting a little bit better, but in the past, like, you know, maybe it was like 1-6 and then it kind of gets dicey. This year is like maybe 1-8 and then it kind of gets dicey.
Even we're like still 10 well in the dicey. I wasn't that
yeah that's
tough
true
to
that's
find
true.
People even if they're not like amazing prospects,
right? It was still there's still a clear tiers. We're now really just kind of this week and next week, we are kind of going to be stepping out of the throw shit on the wall and see what sticks phase and getting to like the more established kind of players where you can see, okay, that's what's going on. All right. So if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at said MetSzn, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you got your podcasts from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.